Welcome back to Business Edge. And superannuation is one of those things that most of us scratch our heads over because we know we have it. We know that we should be doing something with it. We get a statement every year and it tells us whether we've made money, lost money, or how much money we've hopefully made. But there's been massive changes to the industry. And also, there's a whole bunch of things that, well, us punters, I suppose, should be looking out for. So David Alder from Alder & Partners Private Wealth Management joins me. How are you, David?
Yeah, good. Thanks, Tom.
The whole superannuation fund thing in particular, it's pretty confusing for anyone that isn't in the industry, isn't it?
Definitely, yeah. And there's been a whole bunch of changes to the legislation recently, just before Christmas. And there's a fairly short lead time for getting those adjustments to people's super funds in place to ensure they comply. So certainly something that the average person needs to go and seek professional advice over.
We hear the word diversification an awful lot whenever you talk about sort of superannuation funds and the idea of having a, you know, mix of different types of assets and such in your super fund. Explain how a normal super fund would be carved up in terms of what sort of diversification we've got.
Well, I suppose the issue that we see quite commonly is that a lot of these industry and retail funds are tending to invest clients' capital very much in line with typical indexes. So in Australia, it's the All Ordinaries Index, and that's a highly concentrated index. So a couple of stats. The All Ords makes up 75% of the entire stock market, and it comprises 500 companies. Out of that, about 35% of it is financials, and 26% of it is in the large four banks and Macquarie. 22% of it is in materials and energy, and that pretty much includes mining and oil and gas companies like BHP, Woodside, Santos and Rio. And in addition to the ones I've just mentioned, the 20 largest companies, including Telstra, Wesfarmers, CSL, Woolworths and a couple of others, they make up 53% of the All Ords.
53%.
So it's highly concentrated at a sector and at a company level. So to give you an example, like it's very common that we will have clients come and see us who've got 30, 40 or even 60% of their portfolio invested in the large banks. And that's been prevalent, particularly in the last few years with low interest rates, because those banks are perceived to pay good dividends, and they have paid good dividends.
Yes.
So, yeah, typically those industry and super retail super funds are carrying fairly similar exposure to the index in their equity portfolios. And these mums and dads are probably a little bit unaware of the risks that are involved with that. For example, in the context of the banks, they've had almost 25 years of uninterrupted profit growth. And I suppose people can forget how volatile their profits can be and therefore their dividends. So,
I guess as an observer, you don't see too much volatility in their profit margins. They're always just great big numbers.
Yeah, they are. And they have continued to grow in recent years, but not at the rate they have historically. So broadly, in the case of the banks, I suppose it's all about credit growth and the economy being in good shape. But it doesn't take a material increase in loans going bad or bad debt provisions to see the share prices and the dividends falling substantially. So I don't know when the next recession is going to be in Australia, and people have talked about it for a long time.
Well, does it really need to be a recession, though? I mean, we're in a marketplace where, you know, disruptors are a very common term. And I know I've been to a couple of conferences in the past 6 or 12 months where there's some really out there ideas. And certainly in terms of not so much Bitcoin, but that whole disruptive sort of industry that's going to change the face of how some business is done, particularly internationally. Yeah. Those sorts of things, I mean, they're not obvious and they're probably not going to, you know, just arrive one day. But those sorts of things, you know, the information I've had, for instance, is the banks are scrambling to try and figure out how to cover that type of thing, that type of disruption, because exactly that, the volatility that happens to their profitability and their transactions, because really, I suppose, they're low margin, high turnover, aren't they?
Yeah, that's right. So I agree with everything you've just said. And I think the issue, particularly for the banks, is they're so large that for them to move quickly and be nimble is very hard.
Absolutely.
So you've got these small players, particularly in the financial technology space, who are popping up all over the place with robo-advice and, you know, discounted home loans and aggregating of home loans and so on. So the banks are under threat, definitely, from that angle. But more broadly, I suppose my concern with the banks is, and they are great businesses, but the leverage that they employ to generate their returns is significant. So to give an example, our biggest bank, Commonwealth Bank, that we think their leverage is around 20 times. So by that, I mean, for every $1 of equity, or put it simply, cash that's in their balance sheet, they've lent out $20. And so that gap of the $19, they're borrowing that money from the public in the form of bank deposits and also from the wholesale markets overseas.
It leaves them rather exposed, doesn't it? If something does occur, if there's some sort of, and particularly event-wise, you look at the activities around the world and what sort of disruption that can have, and what happened to the American financial markets on the appointment of Trump and those sorts of things, it doesn't take much to trigger it, does it?
Correct. And I suppose the other point that a lot of people don't think about is the Federal Reserve in the US is looking like it's going to raise rates a few times this year.
Mm.
I think the Reserve Bank in Australia would be very reluctant to cut rates any further because of the housing market on the East Coast in particular. So Australia's relied heavily on attracting wholesale funding from overseas because our interest rates have been higher than the rest of the world for most of the last 20 years.
Mm.
So it's quite possible that situation could reverse in the next 18, 24 months. And so if you're a Japanese bond fund manager who's been happy to lend money to the Commonwealth Bank, well, you might no longer be prepared to do that. So you send the money to the US, and our Commonwealth Bank is then suddenly very constrained on what it can lend out, and credit growth or lack of it is a big negative for the economy.
And that's the sort of thing they talk about, isn't it? When they talk about the cost of money, it's not necessarily the Reserve Bank interest rate, but it's the cost of actually exactly that, getting money from international to be able to fund that. If that monetary policy tightens up for whatever reason, like the example you used, that the US is picking up that money instead of Australia, then they have to go elsewhere and pay more.
Correct. That's right. So
it actually has very little to do with the Reserve Bank.
That's right. It's also got something to do with our credit rating nationally.
Mm.
And rightly or wrongly, a lot of these bond fund managers would look at the Commonwealth Bank and say it's implicitly guaranteed by the federal government. They're probably right.
Yeah.
But I suppose if the federal government's balance sheet continues to deteriorate, their ability to bail out these banks is going to be constrained. So all of these things are interlinked. And I'm not saying don't own bank shares, I'm just saying keep it in moderation and be aware of that leverage and focus more on just the dividend. And in the case of the Commonwealth Bank and most of the banks, they're actually now paying out 80% of what they're earning. So that doesn't leave a lot to put away back into the business and for the issues you talked about around technology threats and so on. So the businesses are highly levered and reliant upon factors that can be somewhat outside their control.
In terms of someone that, and I suppose there's a growing trend towards self-managed super funds as well, and of course the regulations around that are pretty tight and everything else, but there's still a talk about diversification. What other options have you got? What can you look at other than the obvious big targets? Because you're quite right. I mean, as soon as you start talking about shares, you talk about the big miners, the big banks, the big retailers. What else is there?
Well, most of the extra diversification will come from investing overseas.
Hmm.
And there are lots of different ways you can do that now. It's partly because of technology, it's made it a lot easier. So you can invest directly in sectors in the US and Europe that are not available here. So pharmaceuticals, as an example, e-commerce, manufacturing, technology. So there's lots of different ways you can do it. I think also it's worth considering about the ability to benefit from falling markets as well as rising markets.
Mm-hmm.
And you'd be amazed how many people have got their entire super fund invested in equities and property and cash and bonds, but they're completely reliant upon buying low and selling high, and they don't benefit at all from falling markets and taking positions against certain sectors that are clearly under pressure. So I know it's a dirty word, but hedge funds can be can be worth considering, and that's a very opaque sector, so you'd certainly want professional advice if you're going to look at those.
Well, that was my next point. If you've got a super fund, not necessarily a self-managed one, but you're in some sort of industry fund or commercial fund as such, you really haven't got any control on it, have you?
They have a limited number of options that you can sort of tick the box and say, I want to be in balanced or growth or aggressive or Aussie shares.
Hmm.
But they are quite limited, and there's no visibility really on the see-through on exactly what they're holding.
Yeah.
And so certainly in the last couple of years, we've seen a lot of people in Perth who've come to us, and I say to them, well, what's your job? And they say, I'm an engineer. And I think, here we go. And turns out that, you know, they've recently lost their job. They own their own home. They've got an investment property which was negatively geared, which helped from a tax point of view, but suddenly their tenants just moved out because their tenant was also employed in the resources space.
Yeah.
So they've lost the tenant. The value of their investment property in their home has declined. The banks start to get a little bit jumpy when they find out the employee's lost their job. And then I say to them, well, what about your super fund? And they show me their industry super fund, and they don't quite realise there's heavy correlation there to resources and banks, and banks and property are correlated themselves. So, you know, I think it's prudent for everyone, particularly those in Western Australia, to think about taking a more proactive view with their superannuation and make sure that the way that the super fund performs is not correlated with how their employment or property investments are going to do.
Yeah, because, I mean, the diversification, I suppose, by way, it implies that you shouldn't have all your eggs in one basket, not only from an investment point of view, but, you know, as you said, you're linking it with your employment as well. It's the whole thing. Everything is all in one particular sector, isn't it?
That's right. And where we sit now is a prime example.
Yes. You know,
this whole street is almost empty. So,
yeah.
Yeah, I think the public have probably started to work this out when they open their envelopes from their super fund in the half year and full year period. So, yeah, I'd certainly encourage them to think more carefully about how the underlying funds are invested and what risk they're actually taking.
To contact you and get some advice and get some direction on what to do, what's the best way to contact you?
Well, our phone number is on our website. The website is www.alderandpartners.com. That's alderandpartners.com.au.
Excellent. Good advice, and it's something that certainly does affect every single one of us. So it's worthwhile finding out what's going on, and particularly those that may be a little bit disappointed at the bottom line number on their super fund in the last couple of years, because it certainly affected all of us.
Indeed.
Good on you. Thanks for your time, David.
Thanks for having me, Tom.
Pleasure. David Alder from Alder and Partners Private Wealth Management. That's alderandpartners.com.au. And we'll be back with more on Business Edge very shortly.